Hi, folks. So welcome back to On Call with Insignia, where you go on call with leaders innovating the future of Southeast Asia's internet and digital economy, or as we like to call it, ASEAN innovation. So it's quite interesting now. We're more than halfway through season 3 of the show. And over the past few episodes, we've been able to talk to a couple of really interesting VCs from different parts of the world and have them share their thoughts in Southeast Asia. And we're back with another episode with a venture capitalist. And we're doing this in conjunction with Insignia Ventures Academy, which is the 12-week accelerator which Insignia Ventures is supporting. To our listeners out there, you guys can expect to have more episodes with mentors as well as our alumni from the program as well. So it's going to be quite exciting next few episodes for the show. But in the meantime, we have a very special guest who's going to talk about a building VC career through different types of transitions, as well as talking about the Philippine startup ecosystem, which we really haven't been able to cover as much on the show. So really excited about that. And with us today, we have Mark Singh from Gentry. He's a VP at Gentry. Previously, he worked at PE and then went to CarpDev and Gojek and then eventually joined Go Ventures as well. And
so before we go on call, don't forget to follow our show on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you're listening to podcasts. And you can follow us for daily content for founders and investors on Twitter at InsigniaVC and Instagram at Insignia_VC. Now let's head into the call.
Excited to have you on the show, Mark. How are you doing?
Hi, Paolo. Thanks for the invite. Doing good today. Thanks for bringing me on board.
It's great to have you on and excited to hear about your story as well. Now that you're focused a lot in the Philippines, excited to hear about your views vis-a-vis all these other markets that you've operated and worked in. But first things first, we'd love to know what excites you about your work right now at Gentry.
So I think it's how fast the Philippines market is moving and it's developing. COVID has really accelerated the digital trends. This is not just a Philippines story, it's more of a Southeast Asian story, right? We have a greater internet penetration now. People are using services which previously was mainly the alternative to offline. So you get a very high online adoption rate. People are consuming a lot of media content, you know, people are stuck at home. So you see the same characteristics in the Philippines as well. And I think that's what really excites me, because the amount of opportunity it now creates for companies to pop up over that infrastructure base that has been created, the additional infrastructure that has been developed through COVID in that sense. So it's really exciting to have that front row seat to actually really see how the ecosystem is coming up. I mean, not from zero. We had some initial successes early on, but in terms of the pace that Philippines has grown, it's not been as fast naturally as Indonesia and Vietnam, right? Because those are the two main markets that people really focus on in Southeast Asia. So it's really exciting to see how Philippines is catching up in that sense. I think that's generally what most funds are starting to notice, at least you focus on this market.
I share the same sentiment. Prior to Insignia, I was also pretty active as well in the Philippine startup ecosystem and had the privilege of being able to see it grow. And now we have a lot bigger rounds as well happening in terms of venture-backed startups. So we'll definitely talk about that. But first things first, I want to dial back a little bit. You've had quite a storied career thus far, eventually leading up to Gentry. And in particular, I saw it as three transitions. And I think the first one was from the start of your career in PE and then transitioning to corporate development at Gojek. So maybe you can tell our audience a little bit more about that transition and sure. Why you made that jump.
Sure. So my university in the UK came back after a short little 1 year of work there in the M&A advisory firm. So when I joined up the PE fund, I was actually posted straight to Jakarta. So the PE fund I joined is actually called Tail Partners. They're a bit more of a regional view towards their growth equity investments. They mainly invest in family-owned businesses. So these are very traditional businesses. It can be like fertilizer plants. It can be glove manufacturing factories. It can be frozen food processing plants. So it's very like physical, right? So the main reason they were raising capital for us is to basically fund CapEx, also working capital needs. But really very much we were the only investor in the company, right? You're the partner to the family business in that sense. It's kind of a different investment style, I guess, from VC in the sense that you're not working in syndicates here. It's a lot of internal operational value you bring to the table. You also work with the founders very closely because they are the ones that you have to exit with, right? There's not going to be that many voices on the board as well. So I did Indonesia with them. And then I also had the opportunity to look a bit more regionally besides Indonesia. So I was a year in Indonesia, did a few deals there. When moved to Malaysia, actually, strangely enough, KL, because that's where the PE fund had its biggest office. The middle and back office was also there. So then I started looking from Malaysia outwards towards Vietnam and Philippines. And actually the market that I really focused on ended up being the Philippines. So I had a chance to really look at different family businesses in the Philippines market. I think what was interesting was that some of the businesses I looked at, the SM Group I looked at as well.
back then. It comes full circle, I think.
Yeah, so it comes full circle. I remember looking at Togo, for instance, back when this was before the SMs invested, right? So SMIC ended up investing in them. But just before that, so I remember looking at them. So I had like, some contacts there, some friends in the industry already, which was really helpful when I now came back in Gentry, jumping a little bit back to the Tail experience and joining up with Bojack. So in my like third year of work with Tilt, so at the point I done 3 or 4 deals in different markets. So obviously you're very regional focused, flying to different countries every week, 2 countries in a week sometimes. There was an opportunity to join up with Gojek. This was back in the Series D days. This was 3 years later after my career in Tilt and I first saw Gojek. Gojek was already, I think, 7 years old at that time. So Gojek's story started as a call center, right? And then developed from a call center into this app when Northstar invested. And thereafter, now it's a super app, you know it, right? So there's a opportunity to join them at the Series D. And this was exciting because at that point, they had raised quite a bit of money. I think it was about 150 or something around there. But they were going in a bit more of an international expansion mode.
Yeah, I think they were making a couple of acquisitions as well.
Correct. And that was part of that. So I was headhunted. I joined up with Gojek. One of the first things I did was Series A fundraising. Naturally, fundraising never leaves your job in CopDev. That's one of the main roles of CopDev is fundraise. But yeah, one of the other roles CopDev is to make strategic acquisitions, and that was the bit that I really focused on as well. So we did Coinstock PH. Me and my boss at the time, Adi Kumar, two of us actually did Coinstock PH together. So that involved us flying nonstop to Manila, 2-3 weeks out of Oman in Manila from Jakarta. We forget that Southeast Asia is not that connected sometimes. Flying from Jakarta to Manila is not that easy because it's only one flight a day or 2 flights a day. Apart from Singapore, not everywhere is actually that easy to fly. For example, if you want to fly from Jakarta to Bangalore, there's no direct flights. You have to fly through Singapore. At the time, it was a bit mind-boggling because you have so many talents flying through. So joined up at Coinstock.ph. That deal took a bit of time. We worked very closely with Juan Jose. That took about a year to close out. But once we did that and once we finished that, there's an opportunity for Adi Kumar and me to jump over to the Go Ventures team. Okay, so the Go Ventures is quite a unique setup. It's not a corporate VC fund, despite what media typically report nowadays. It's not a corporate venture vehicle of Gojek. So it's a $175 million fund one that they raised. But Gojek was only one of 27 investors and not the majority. I mean, it was the largest investor, Anchor L. The main objective of Go Ventures is very much financial returns. And this is where that gets really, really interesting, right? Because Gojek knew that they didn't want to just do a CVC. They wanted to do a fund that could actually make returns and actually justify its existence, right?
It's more like an institutional VC more than anything.
Correct. And that's what they hired Aditya Kumar to join up and do that. So Aditya Kumar was me and Adi Kumar's boss that they brought in. But we were part of the initial founding team, right? So this was us actually really developing a fund from scratch. I still remember the team having to work on the LPAs and the PPMs because this was an institutional fund that we created. So, you know, typical structures that you would expect in an institutional fund. So we imposed that. We had quite a full team then. It was really cool how we actually structured the team. Everyone got really close. We were doing really cool deals, like some notable ones like HaloDoc, for instance. Other big winners that we did Mobile Premier League, which I'm happy to call my portfolio now in Gentry as well. So managed to invest in that after I left Go Ventures as well. We did interesting things like Rebel Foods. We really pioneered the corridor from India to Indonesia, where we brought in companies like Rebel Foods and MPL into Indonesia to launch that with Gojek's help. The idea here was that we wanted to invest financially, be able to exit with the founders to the market, create a financial return, but at the same time, give them the support of arm's length partnerships with Gojek. We used to have this saying, if something depends on Gojek a bit too much, then it's probably a CopDev deal because it's going to end up getting acquired. If something depends on Gojek for like 100% of its revenue, right, then it's definitely not a venture deal then, right? Concentration risk there is just a bit too high. That's how we kind of look at it. So I ended up being with Go Ventures, I think, for a year, half, 2 years. Part of the founding team, really loved the team there. We are still very good friends. I catch up with Adi Kumar and Kumar every other month. So it's been really cool. But then over COVID, I had the opportunity to launch Gentry. And this is really interesting. So I got introduced to John Cresson, one of the family members. From there, was brought on board, part of the team.
What sold you on? I mean, did John like pitch to you or did you come in with the idea or?
So not many people in Singapore, I realize, know that much about the Philippines in the sense that actually having been to the market quite a bit, I think anyone who's been to the Philippines even once, you know how big SM Group is. I think the moment you land, you're like, okay, like, yeah, you know. So when I heard that there was a chance with the family office of the SM Group to launch this venture strategy, I was like, oh, wow. I mean, you can't really say no to that. I mean, this is such a big group. They were at the point starting to really think digitally in a bit of a bigger way. This was pre-COVID that I was starting to talk to them. I think this was February, March, when you started hearing China was starting to lock down a little bit. People were getting a little bit worried, but no one thought that COVID would last as long as it did. I think everyone thought it'd be like SARS, right? I think that's what the assumption was. So yeah, I think that's when people started to really think about digitalization. At that point, Philippines venture-wise, Foxmon was already there. Foxmon's been there for some time. I love the guys there. Franco was really great there. But yeah, you had the CVCs, you had the Kickstart guys, the JG Dev guys. So I knew that the SM side of things were kind of like looking to do something in the venture space as well. It kind of made sense. It's a natural extension of the strategy as well. But I guess it's how we have really shaped that sort of strategy, right? Does a CVC approach work better, or does a financial VC under the family office work better? And I guess it also goes into the family's plans as well for the fund itself. So the way we structured it, and I guess why I was brought in, was kind of to replicate a very similar sort of, I wouldn't say completely, but it was very different markets. It was a very different linked affiliates in that sense. Gojek is quite a different sort of animal in a very digital format. So yeah, that's where I was brought in to launch this new strategy, which kind of mirrors it because we wanted to have a financial mandate that allowed us to make financial returns. And that's the key goal for Gentry, right? Is to really work with the founders, maximize portfolio value. So we are always sitting on the side of the founders. We want to really maximize portfolio value here. We don't want to control any startup because that's not the way to allow a founder to really grow. We never ever go above 20% of any cap table, but tend to stay within the 5-10% range typically. In terms of the fund itself, the way we provide value is through very arm's length support from SM. So we wouldn't be offering any preferential terms because that's typically limited to affiliates of SM itself.
And I mean, they would have their own separate deal flow pipeline for that.
Correct. But for us, what we are doing is really giving them the opportunity to meet the right team, and the right team and say, yeah, I want to work with this. You guys invested in it as well. Let me work with them. But we don't influence their buy-in from the operation side of things because we don't have that purview there. That's where I guess we draw the line quite clearly. That way we can actually make financial investments as well. When we set up Gentry, then it was around that sort of parameters because we wanted to make the fund actually sustainable. And the goal here is very much to develop an institutional fund under the C family office. It's very much to bring the sort of best practices that I learned at Gojek, even at Go Ventures, into the setup here. So yeah, that's how we have kind of started.
Thanks for really going through all your transitions and that whole story from PE all the way now to Gentry. And as I said earlier, it seems like a really full circle. And one thing that I noticed is that your career also went through some interesting shifts in how VC or investing in startups has been done in Southeast Asia. And I wanted to piece apart some of those trends and get your thoughts on that. What are your thoughts on more organizations trying to get into this space and not necessarily doing CVCs, for example, but more institutional VC funds? And how would that impact fund managers or investors like yourself, as well as the overall ecosystem?
Sure. One of the things I realized that they start investing earlier, like seed stage, Series A, right? You kind of have to help the founder a little bit. You're not running the company, but you're providing support. I know England does it very well. I know England connects its founders with really great people. But I think that ability to provide support really comes from either two things, right? You develop an operational support team. I know Insignia has a development team in-house, which is really helpful, I think, for a lot of startups, especially for extra capacity that they need. That's one form of support. I think that's great. You'd either connect founders with people within your network because you have that founder background, you have sort of technical background as well. So you can connect them to the right people like instantaneously. The other thing as well is that as your portfolio develops, you can connect them quite usefully to other people in your portfolio, which then creates even more value for both you as well as everyone else that you've invested in. I think that's interesting, right? But that all comes as you develop as a team, as an institution, right? So I think when you start a new fund, it's really important to understand that you're not going to have all these pieces straight away from day one. You're going to take time to build out the team. You're going to take time to build out ethos for the team as well, to make sure that people are advising your startup founders the right way. It takes time to grow your portfolio as well. It takes time for your portfolio companies to get big enough to support other people as well, not just to drive single-handedly themselves. So it takes time. And I think one of the shortcuts that something like a Gojek gives Go Ventures is that arm's length ability to say, hey, do you want to work with Gojek on this arm's length basis? You want to provide support in the arm's length basis, right? I'll think about it from lowering customer acquisition costs because you're working with a behemoth in both cases that has a very strong captive downstream consumer base. So for a lot of consumer startups, you're shortcutting the high acquisition costs you typically need to spend on your own digital marketing because you're getting a channel partnership here to supercharge your growth. So we look at that format, and I think that allows Go Ventures and Gentry both to hyperscale as a fund in some senses because we were able to provide the additional value that founders are looking for. So we are able to also then get into more interesting use because you're providing not just the financial value, right? That format and that thinking there has to come hand in hand as you start to launch a new fund. What really is your value add here to the founder, right? If you're just providing money, you're not talking about a lot of money here, right? Series A fundraisings in Southeast Asia range from 5-20 mil. Typically, I mean, obviously outliers, 5-20 mil sort of fundraising size. That's not a lot of money given the amount of capital that's flowing into our market right now, right? So if everyone's money is as green as everyone else's, really what value are you bringing to the startup founder? And I think that's what differentiates funds. Deal making is obviously just incredibly competitive now, especially at the early stages, because you have a lot of new family offices popping up in Singapore. You have a lot of new funds as well, first-time funds popping up. Just really thinking about that value add here. That's how I kind of view the way forward in terms of the way we develop
Gentry and Go Ventures. And I think having this sort of a clear understanding of your value add, I think is quite important.
Right, right. I wanted to zoom out a little bit and then look again back at your career and ask you, given the different roles that you've taken, PE versus corp dev versus VC, how would you compare and contrast that in terms of work-life balance from a professional standpoint?
Very different. VC is a flow-based business. So it's all about your deal flow. It's all about meeting companies, meeting new founders every day. You gotta do like 4 or 5 new calls every day. PE is very much, you get on the deal and it lasts for like 6-7 months. Most of the time it's 4 months, sometimes it goes 6-7 months because it's more complex. There's a lot more to due diligence. There's a larger ticket size as well. So if you want to do your checks, there's an FDD process. Sometimes you engage with the party advisors on as well. So it's a process that takes some time because you're very much covering your bases, but at the same time, you're really getting to know the company quite deeply in the PE setting. That's one of the main differences here is that the volume of deals you see in PE is a lot less. And you go very much more in depth because there's more data to actually really dig in. These are companies that operate for like 10, 20 years. Your projections are annual because it's about production capacity, right? Whereas in VC, your projections are always monthly, right? Because company grows super fast. People grow like double-digit growth every month. You get 100% growth in a year. That's one of the key differences between VC and PE. CopDev is a completely different beast altogether. CopDev is the other side of the table, right? I wouldn't say it's true the buy side, but you're kind of on the other side of the table because in some senses, I'm doing two roles. Strategic acquisitions, which is very much M&A banking, where you're pretty much serving as an M&A advisor to Gojek to make acquisitions in a sense. You're typically negotiating SPAs. In terms of the documents that you produce, it's not IC paper. It's more of a small bot document. It's a little bit different. And then on the fundraising side, which is the other part of CopDev job, you are pretty much pitching to PE funds, your VC funds. It's fun because you're meeting a lot of new investors. Gojek's cap table is very big. So there's a lot of queries you get every day, which is eye-opening because Gojek has a very strong data setup. You use Taboo, you use Metabase. You're able to query the BI quite easily. Let's just use what it should be at a startup as they start to really sort of institutionalize in that sense. So having been through that journey, joining in the middle of PE compared to VC is that I guess I move faster pace. PE, things took a little bit longer to gestate. Gojek, things change every month. There's a new service launch every month. How fast-paced that was, it really teaches you very fast. Thereafter, Go Ventures, VC works even fast-paced because you're looking at different deals, you're trying to make decisions on a faster pace so you can actually get through really strong founders. But at the same time, you're trying to go in-depth into the ones that you really like. So it's a very different skill set altogether, but at the same time, common theme there and a common thread there is you're using your financial knowledge, your tree statement accounting knowledge, understanding of how to value things, making the assessments, making recommendations to IC. Those are skills that I think is the common thread among the other jobs.
I wanted to shift gears a bit, and we've talked a little bit about the Philippines already, but I just wanted to zoom in a little bit more and talk about, for example, in the book that England and I co-authored last year, Navigating SEO Innovation, we sort of use the Philippines to talk about the different elements to create like a startup ecosystem, from regulations to founder pool to capital pool. Having seen the Philippines, even when you were in Gojek with the Coins acquisition, and even before that, talking to family offices there, how have you seen the gaps being closed in the Philippines, and what are the biggest gaps now in the ecosystem?
I think for any market to develop, I think it comes hand in hand with regulation, right? I think it's very supportive government's ecosystem is very important. The industry with the most clarity, I think, is the fintech industry in the Philippines. From very early on, I think even 2005, the OPS licenses started being produced, developed as a policy framework. You have the FX license now, the EMI license. Those are three main licenses in fintech. And then now you have digital banking license that's been launched that allows you to not even have to open a branch and be able to launch a bank. I think the clarity there that the BSP has been providing is actually very significant. And that has actually led to very strong investor interest in fintech in the Philippines. You have guys like Tonic, you have First Circle. I'm not speaking to Patrick here. He's also doing very interesting things in the banking space. Tonic as well. Tonic is really exciting. Greg has done great work. He's grown so fast. So it's really exciting to see how that developed. And I think that development there and the investor interest is because clarity has been provided. It's because the regulatory framework is very clear. Okay, not every industry obviously needs regulation, right? You're not going to regulate every single industry. For those that need, I think like InsurTech, for instance, there's a sandbox right now, which is really helpful for HMOs to develop out of or TPAs to develop. I think the InsurTech industry has gone through that improvement and clarity. There'll be more industries that has impediments that get lifted in that sense. I think that in terms of development of the ecosystem, I think that's what I kind of see. Not a lot of the investor interest is in fintech. Actually, you're tapping into the entire GDP growth of the country. It's so wide ranging. It touches every part, every facet of your life because, you know, you're transacting, making transactions. Even in lending, right? Lending is a levered bet on the economy because you're actually lending to provide growth to the economy, right? So it's a levered bet on the economy. When we think about other industries that have gotten a lot of regional global investor interests. The other one is the creator economy, like Kumun actually has really taken advantage of that. That's very much driven by the nature of Filipino consumption, digital consumption that has picked up over COVID as well. Everyone's in lockdown. That are macro trends. Investors are going to pick up on that. It just helps the regulatory sort of frameworks tied in to make sure that it can happen. I think the guys at DTI and DOST are doing a great job to launch a Philippine startup fund as well. Very excited for that. That will really provide a lot of impetus towards the growth for the ecosystem as well.
Really interesting points that you brought up. Quite interesting that the Philippines has a different trajectory than most of Southeast Asia, where even Indonesia, where it was more like e-commerce driven, while the Philippines has been mostly fintech driven, at least in terms of gaining investor interest. So how should a founder think about pitching essentially the Philippines, right, to like regional investors, or say if they're not in one of these like hot sectors, right?
I think you should think more globally, right? If the Philippines isn't big enough, you don't need to just stay in the Philippines. There's OFWs all over the world. You can sell to them. You see great companies that want to export that they're trying to do that, really trying to take advantage of some of their products in the US. If the great founders here are guys that the market that you're targeting has only a service optimal market of like 50 mil, right? What do you do, right? So you need to kind of have that view towards more of a global approach, right? Not big enough for me in one market. I think five. Hey, how do I enter the market easily that way? I think one of the great things that COVID has done is that everything has been remote. People are building remote organizations. People are building startups having not been to the country they are in. This is quite enlightening, right? The fact that I'm talking to you, I have not met you in person as well. And then people have not met the team members in person because it's been so restrictive, right? Naturally, we lose a very big part of human interaction from that. We lose a very big part of being able to connect directly with people emotionally as well. But at the same time, you gain a lot of efficiency gains.
You know, now that we've talked about the Philippines, I also wanted to ask, where do you see the ecosystem going in the next 5 years? And how do you see your own personal role as an investor play out in the ecosystem?
So I'm really excited for the next generation of, as A system Z calls it, elephants come up in the Philippines. The kind of way Indonesia developed was that you had the first wave of unicorns, right? Like the Gojeks, Tokopedias, the Galapas, all these players came up, and then they spawned other players after them, right? Because it showed an example that you could actually come back and do this. You can do this exciting thing in the Philippines. People like examples. We are about to see our first company that could be used as a strong example for people to rally around and say like, look, you know, it's doable in the Philippines, right? We can actually create a unicorn company in the Philippines and create life-changing value for everyone in the economy that consumes our product. But at the same time as well, really make strong returns as a founder as well, right? So this is actually worth doing, right? Because it's life-changing money that you make as a founder. This life-changing experience that you have. But the effect of that as well is that the people that you bring into your organization would then spawn 1,000 ships, right? Yeah, I meet a lot of alumni from Gojek and they're doing their own thing because they learn the best practices. You are able to then convey that into the next startup. And the hyper growth experience of double-digit growth every single month, that is always expected from you. That carries through into your new startup as well. Because you have that same sort of expectation that I need to do this. Product managers that come up from that sort of hyper growth organization behave in a very different way because they expect and they know how to scale the product in the hyper-growth format as well. So I think that that's where the unique nature of having the first generation to build around after that becomes very important. And I think we are just about to see that in the Philippines solid develop. So that's why it's so exciting for the next 5 years.
Yeah, I really love that you emphasize that cycle really of unicorn creation and then that talent from these unicorns actually creating their own startups and that becomes like a new generation of startups that could then become unicorns. And it's just like a whole complete cycle that drives the ecosystem forward. That's certainly one thing that we believe in at Insignia as well and that we invest in as well. And on that note, I'd like for us to go into really the most important part of our podcast, which is the rapid fire round. So we just ask some really quick questions and you can just give us some short and sweet answers. First things first, what are the top three skills of a VC?
I think it's always been eager to learn because honestly, you're as good as the founders you meet. Being in VC is a lot about pattern matching, especially for someone like me with more of a finance background. I don't claim to be a founder at all. I founded one startup, my friend, it was more of a passion project. It was more of a fun thing we wanted to do. Hired devs for that and stuff. So that's really fun. But I'm not a founder. I think that's one thing. So I think the most key skill for me as a VC is having here the ability to sort of really have a good rapport with founders because these are the guys that are going to write your returns to fun. They're the ones that are teaching you as well. They teach me a lot about the complexities of business as well, and what they experience. And I want to be as supportive as possible, at least on the fundraising side, to really connect them to the right people to talk to. If I have networks that through Gojek, they need some product management support, I'm able to connect them to the right people who could provide advice. And yeah, I try to do that. For me, it's all about being helpful. You know, it's all about being available to your founders. And it's all about being eager to learn from them as well.
It definitely boils down to founder relationships. And speaking about that, what is the most definitive trait of a founder that you would invest in?
I think the most definitive trait you get is really vision, right? And the ability to see ahead and say, my company is going to be worth this, right? In the future, you then bring around people around you that can support you to get to that vision and that goal. That becomes more of a role of team leader, you know, someone who's galvanizing the troops as a general, right? That's really what we look for from founders. Founders can grow 0 to 10 and then 10 to 50, right? All these are different phases in the company. 50 to 100 is a different phase. Different skill sets require each phase. I think founders who can see that sort of goal, also recognizing their need to hire around them. I think one of the key things founders need to also do is be able to hire the right people at the right time to really help them to grow, because you can't do everything, right? If you're doing everything, you're probably going to get maxed out, tapped out. You need that sort of support base, co-founders. That's the key thing that we're really looking for. People with a clear vision and roadmap.
And that generates that really magnetic effect when it comes to bringing people in. My next question is, if you were a founder in Southeast Asia today, what kind of company or product would you be building?
I always have ideas. I didn't mention I co-founded a startup with my best friend. It's more of a donations crowdfunding platform to get students funded. So I'm very close to the sort of idea about access to education. I really like what Rudy Fee is doing in this space. I don't believe in student debt too much. I think that's very restrictive for a lot of people. So I think it'll be something around this space. It'll be around education financing problem. I've seen interesting movements recently from Akad Arena, who's been recently launched a pay to grad sort of model around Axie Infinity. That's interesting. So I've seen interesting things pop around there. I think if I do something as a founder, I'll probably do something in that space.
I think that's a pretty interesting space. And what do you do to de-stress? I mean, obviously you mentioned that VC is a very fast-paced job.
I run a lot and I cycle a lot. So I wrote I'm one of those kids that I wouldn't say picked up by over COVID, but I was cycling before, but then got really back into it because the last time I cycled was probably back in my JC triathlon days. So it's been a while, but I cycle a lot. I run a lot. So I do a lot of endurance sports. I find that it allows me to really de-stress and, you know, clear your mind. I know Ayla likes to go for walks. I think having some sort of physical exercise is quite important. At least keeps you healthy, right?
And last question is, you know, since we're doing these series of episodes within On Call with Insignia Show as part of Insignia Ventures Academy, and the participants go through a 12-week experience learning about what it's like to be a venture capitalist, you've not just been a VC, but you've also helped to set up funds as well. So I'm pretty curious, like, what's your biggest advice for, you know, anybody who wants to break into VC or eventually become a fund manager themselves?
I guess there's two routes here, right? There's the financial route, which is a bit harder in space. That means you join a VC firm as an analyst, intern analyst, and you go out associate VP that thereafter, right? That's one route. The other route is obviously to start a startup yourself, get experience. You can do VC at the start, do a startup and come back in, because then you get the sort of operational and ability to understand how a company hyperscales or how a company fails. So you can provide that sort of advice to a founder as well. That's the two typical routes that I typically see. Naturally, there are more. Yeah, you know, make career switches and stuff like that. The easiest way, obviously, is if you're a fresh grad, is to naturally first get an internship or analyst role at a VC fund. I think that's super important because it keeps your leg in, right? And thereafter, whether or not you stay all the way and grow within the organization, or you go out and do a startup and then come back in, the path there is up to you. You learn different things in different ways. But I think the startup route becomes one that allows you to provide additional insight, right? If you join a corp dev team of a very fast-growing startup, or you join a product management team of a fast-growing startup, you learn a lot. That sort of experience where you make the jump out and come back in probably helps a lot.
I think there are a lot more founders as well that are becoming angel investors in the ecosystem as the ecosystem matures. A couple of our portfolio founders are angel investing as well, which is really exciting. So yeah, on that note, thank you so much, Mark, for sharing really deeply about your experience going from PE at Dell to Gojek, and then now Gentry, focusing a lot in the Philippines. And then speaking of the Philippines, you also got to talk about a lot of the different trends that you've seen over the past couple of years and what excites you about the future. So really a lot to unpack for our listeners, and hopefully they all come out of this learning something new about VC or about the Philippines. So thank you so much again, Mark, for coming on the show.
Thanks, Pablo. Thanks for inviting. I think that was a really good chat.
Stay on the line with us for more conversations with our founders and investors in the region. Until our next call, I am Pablo Aquino, and this has been On Call with Insignia Ventures.